jeans, 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 jeans.
Techno jeans.
Jeans, jeans, jeans.
You pull them up, you pull them high, you pull them up into the sky. Jeans?
This is called Morning High.
Oh, I like it. That's exactly what it feels like.
Who should I, let me tell you real quick before we...
This is a song for Joey Diaz.
It was sent by Matthew Hancock. Thank you, Matthew.
Thanks, Matthew.
Thanks for wearing them high.
Chicago jeans. July 11th through 14th, I'm going to be at your Chicago Improv. Wear your jeans high. Come to see me. And then July 18th through 21st, Columbus Funny Bone. Columbus, Ohio, also a great location to wear your denim as high and tight as you possibly can.
Ooh, I like that.
July 27th, Uptown Theater in Napa, California. That's just a one-nighter kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where I'm at. That's where I'm at for July. What about you, James?
That's what's up. That's what's up.
That's what's up.
That's what's up. My greatest and largest and heaviest apologies to Minneapolis. Some things came up in, you know, this is the biz. You know how it is.
Showbiz and whatnot.
It's showbiz. President of show business called me and I had to rearrange some things. So I apologize. You know I love you, Minneapolis. I love Acme. I just couldn't make it. So I'm sorry. I had to cancel. So here's where I'll be, though, next few weeks. July 5th, 6th, and 7th, just a few dates. I will be at the West Palm Beach Improv.
Or July 5th through 7th.
Oh, that's another way of saying it. What did I say?
July 5th, yeah. July 6th, July 7th.
Is that
July
how I said
5th,
it?
5th, 6th, and 7th. Yeah. That's like me being like July 11th.
But you're making it sound like I said...
July 12th, July 13th, July 14th.
July 5, July 6, July 7.
You kind of did.
All right. July 5th through 7th, Palm Beach Improv. Jesus Christ. July 11th through 14th, Hartford Funny Bone.
Yeah.
And then July 18th through 21, Toledo Funny Bone.
Yeah.
So that's raw. That's where I'll be the next few weeks. So come see me.
We're both rocking out Ohio this month, dude. I'm in Columbus. You're in Toledo.
That's my home state, man. Oh, and guess what? Pretty soon, not right now, but pretty soon we'll be announcing the next two cities that we're going to go to. The contracts are being signed. And we're very excited to announce where we'll be going.
What cities could it be, Gene?
I don't know.
We'll see.
But we're going to do the podcast live.
Crazy.
In your face.
Can you believe the risks we'll be taking?
Yeah.
Blue Band could be making so many
Blue
mistakes.
Blue Band could fuck shit up.
It's going to be so crazy.
It will be crazy. So there is that. And that's great news. We have a new sponsor.
Oh, okay.
This is exciting.
Who's that?
Our new sponsor is LendingTree. Rates are starting to tick up. Over the last 2 months, they have jumped over a full percentage point. But luckily, rates are still incredibly low compared to 20 years ago. With interest rates on their way up, it's simple. Check out these rates now, or they may never be around again. LendingTree, that's not how you say it, LendingTree.com does it right. They do all of the hard work for you. You simply enter your info into the LendingTree.com site and they find lenders for you. LendingTree.com has more than 32 million users, and a lot of those users have rated and reviewed each of their lenders on the LendingTree.com network. www.trylendingtree.com. Answer a few easy questions and LendingTree will provide you with up to 5 competitive loan offers from their network of lenders. Go to www.trylendingtree.com to take advantage of that. You can refinance now, pull equity. Why can't I speak today?
You know why? Because we just came back from vacation.
Well, let me show these LendingTree people I know how to speak.
Okay.
You can refinance now. You can pull equity out of your home or buy your dream home. 15-year rates are as low as 3.5% APR, while a 30-year is as low as 4.38 APR. They are currently on the rise. Go to www.trylending3.com. fast, easy, and secure. When you enter our code HOUSE, H-O-U-S-E, you'll get a free home loan mortgage guide filled with tips and tools. It's your crash course guide to answer all your questions. I think I'm going to try that out, actually.
Yeah.
www.trylendingtree.com or call them 1-888-659-1670. Again, it's trylendingtree.com. Check out their low rates today, and don't forget to our entire code, which is HOUSE, H-O-U-S-E, to get your free mortgage crash guide. And this is my favorite part. Ready?
Yes.
Terms and conditions may apply. Visit www.lendingtree.com for details. LendingTree, NMLS, license number 1136, AZ, mortgage broker license number 0902469, MA mortgage broker license MB 1136, LendingTree arranges with make loans, 1312 Village Drake Drive, Suite 900, Plano, Texas, 79093, WA mortgage broker license MB 1136.
Wow.
That's what you have to do at the end of your
thing.
You gotta do that thing.
Do they tell you to read it like the Micro Machines man?
They didn't say it, but they said that that had to be read.
Wow. And it's smart of you to read it fast because nobody really wants to hear.
But I think we could maybe make it fun and make it competitive to see who can read faster.
Oh, that's interesting. I could totally read it
faster. So you do the next one. Yeah. Oh, really? Well, let's see.
I'm really good at that kind of stuff.
Let's see.
Remember when the Salt and Pepper, remember that song Supersonic, the JJ Fad?
Mm-hmm.
Remember that part where she could rap really fast?
Supersonic.
So, right. She's like, I'm always going to never stop. I can do that part really good.
That's pretty good.
Thank you.
So let's tell people what's up with this episode.
Can I just, first of all, we recorded this episode, two weeks ago before we left.
Uh-huh.
I've been thinking about it ever since.
Really?
Yeah. And I've been honestly dreading it.
Really?
Dreading it, not wanting to drop it. I considered seriously coming to you and being like, okay, we got to take stuff out because I had what is known, I don't know if you saw the episode on Super Soul Sunday with Dr. Brené Brown.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
She gave a talk, a TED talk on vulnerability, and it blew up. And I saw her talking to Oprah, and she said that after she posted that video, she had what is known as a vulnerability hangover, where she was like, oh my God, have I shared too much? And I had the exact thing. I woke up the next day, and I thought, my God, have I shared too much?
Yeah, I got to tell you, I honestly do not think that you did. I think you were you're open and vulnerable and honest, but as somebody who was in the room, because I felt like you and Greg had a special connection in this episode.
We do.
I was so hooked on just the conversation. Like, I was so hooked. We got to get to the episode.
Can I tell you something? Honestly, yeah. I'm a little embarrassed.
I don't think you
should be. For my overshare, I'm a little mortified. Fitzsimmons, let's admit it, came in here.
Yeah.
And he had his way with our show.
He did. We got to tell him this. We just did dates now because we never did dates.
We didn't get to anything.
We didn't do sponsors. No. We didn't do clips. And we didn't even do our show open.
No.
We didn't do any of it.
No.
Fitzsimmons came in here.
No.
And
He derailed.
No, but
sabotaged.
He quietly ended up taking this show into a really engaging and interesting place.
Yes.
And he did it like a absolute pro. I feel like he seduced us.
Most definitely.
And he gave us some drinks.
Yep.
And then like an hour later, I came out of the room and I was like, I can't find my panties.
Yep.
And then he was like, oh, you left them here by the bathtub.
That's exactly how I feel. Yep. That's exactly how
I pro.
Feel.
Greg is a phenomenal comic. If you're not familiar with Greg Fitzsimmons, you should absolutely check out everything he does. I think we pretty much cover it on this episode, like everywhere that you can find him. But, you know, he has... go to his website, gregfitzsimmons.com. You can go check out Fitz Dog Radio. He also does a XM Sirius show, but he has a podcast. He does live dates. He has a book.
Did Stern a lot. Oh, yeah, yeah. Dear Mrs. Fitzsimmons, I think it was called, right? It's like all the notes that his teachers wrote about him being bad and his bad report cards and stuff. It's pretty funny.
Yeah.
Really funny, really talented guy. You're
it's
like
all
him.
At his site. Go to gregfitzsimmons.com, FITZSIMMONS.com. It's a great episode. It's so unlike any episode that we normally do. That's what's unique about it, and that's why we are actually introducing this episode.
Mortified. I am mortified.
Don't be mortified. Friday, we will be back.
Dreading this.
We will be back on Friday with a very jeansy recap of our Dominican week.
You guys have no idea what
it's
happened.
So exciting. We can't wait to. So come back on Friday and we'll have so a lot of new stuff.
So much to share. Can I tell you that I haven't had a Dominican shit yet? And I had some poop soup.
Mm-hmm.
And mm-hmm. I'm anticipating a Dominican blowout tonight.
Well, you'll get the full scoop on Friday. So Friday's episode will be the episode you've been waiting for.
The but brownest
right now,
episode.
Right now, buckle up for this very special episode with Greg Fitzsimmons. Here's the show open that we never played during the show. Enjoy the show.
This shit is big time!
Who is Randy?
Don't bring anyone loving to this.
Your mom in the fucking stand!
Welcome. Welcome to your mom's house with Tom Segura. Tom Segura. And
Christina Pajitsin.
Welcome to your mom's house.
Feel like that.
Yeah.
The pressure's on.
Right. I am just, I can't tell you how many judgments I've made in the last
already?
5 minutes.
Well, you already were like, don't you want to save this for the show?
Well, I always feel like when I do a podcast, I always regret that I wasn't recording as soon as the person sat down because I feel like that's always like the natural start.
Mm-hmm. The greatest is when somebody.
We're going to do it again.
In.
We're going to talk more about it.
What? We're recording.
No, we're not.
Yeah, we are.
You didn't tell me that.
Well, shit, man.
No, erase that. You can't use that.
Okay, hold on. I'll start over.
I'm just kidding.
He's so unprofessional.
I erased it. No, when people come in and gossip, and you're like, whoa.
They name names.
Let me see this. One second. Keep saying what you were saying.
And you don't tell them the podcast started. I always thought that would be a great move, is to just really to do that.
It is the best move.
Yeah.
The thing is that like let's say you'd come in and you're like, you know, it was a piece of shit and we were recording and or whatever, whatever type of gossip, it would be so great. But at the same time, even if I mean, didn't know you didn't, I would feel like such an asshole if I.
Well, I mean, who would do your podcast?
Well, yeah, right. Of course. Yeah,
no
yeah.
Trust
but it would be
anymore.
One really great one, podcast.
And I get 800,000 downloads an episode.
I mean, like
episode.
Right now you've got champagne out. You guys are. Right. You're celebrating the end of doing a bunch of podcasts.
Right.
And who knows, maybe forever, and maybe this is the one. You go like, you know what? Nobody knows this is our last one except us.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And we're going to pull every cheap trick.
Mm-hmm.
We are going to pull out naked photos of Greg as a boy. We're going to
yes.
make him cry.
Oh, like
yes.
That.
Oh, speaking of that, what was that? This just
Jesus.
Popped in my head. I'm picturing,
I don't like where this is going.
I'm picturing you as a boy, a young boy, and you wrote a book. Wasn't it letters?
Like yeah, music? When I used to get in trouble a lot as a kid, I found out when I was an adult that my mother, I found a box in my aunt's basement in the Bronx with all the letters and report cards of me being in trouble my whole life, police reports,
what?
Art clippings from the newspaper of when I'd been arrested.
Jesus.
And it was like this hall of fame of me fucking up.
That's amazing.
What did you get arrested for?
A few times for fighting, assault with a deadly weapon.
Assault with a deadly weapon for real?
Wow. Right.
Wow.
Who are you fighting?
This bunch of black guys.
I fought with black people as well.
I was just kidding. I want to see if you were racist.
Totally am.
They are animals. But
well, when I say fight, I mean I had a bat.
Right. And they were just talking.
Running.
They were being black.
Yeah. Mm. That's what.
No, it was bar fights, okay. underage bar fights, and then when I was in college, it was another
I'm
one.
I'm so scared of him now. I'm so much right. more. I'm you more should. Afraid
he
has, of him.
There's a real intimidation factor with Greg.
Well, first of all, because we have respect yeah. for him as yeah. an elder comic.
Well, that's fine. Okay. Yeah. Elder, what
He's
the
so
fuck?
He's so much with, older and wiser.
You don't. You didn't. You were not. You are so fucking. You're doing it. It's the last podcast, and you called me old.
No, it's just that no. you don't understand.
In the ranking of comedy world,
God,
you
I
are,
hated that you just said that.
But here's the
you're
thing:
you're so old and so
it's like when
decrepit.
Somebody when young comics treat you like you're a legend. Well, you're just like, oh, that means that I'm not in the present tense to you any longer.
No, it's not
absolutely
that at
not.
All.
No,
it's just that most people aren't old as fuck that come
right,
in here.
Right.
So like, you know what I mean? Like somebody comes in and we're like, look how old this
well,
dude is. It's,
right.
It's and, really inspiring.
No, and to me, to feel like I'm working with people who don't get experienced guests, you know, it's nice to know that I'm bringing any kind of validation to your,
Thank
what's
you.
The show called? right.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, no, see, so. And this is well, called the podcast.
And I would say you're probably the most responsible human being to sit on the end of that mic. Like, none of our friends have, you have two kids, right?
Right.
And, like, a wife and a mortgage. Like, you're definitely above the scale of people we normally have sitting there. So
I guess for comedians, I'm pretty responsible, huh?
You're kind of an anomaly,
right?
Yeah, I'd say.
I know, but there's a bunch of us, though. There's a bunch of us with kids. I mean, Rogan's a
yeah,
you know,
yep,
loving
yep.
dad and
yeah, two kids.
Patton Oswalt's out there with has he got one or two?
I think
kids?
He's got one.
One
I think he's
kid.
Got one.
Well,
very
you know,
doting father. Yeah, absolutely.
You know, but he's not really ready.
Yeah.
For that second. The second one is really where I start giving you respect.
Really?
Yeah, the one kid that could just be you were tired of having abortions.
Well, how do you view
it doesn't mean you wanted it.
How do you view a Gaffigan who has five?
Oh my life.
He's amazing. And not only that, but we used to live in the same neighborhood in Little Italy mm-hmm. together when we were both struggling, starting out.
Yeah.
And we lived in shitty, rundown tenement apartments. And we would eat at this place, Bella's, in the morning. We'd see each other just, you know, going to commercial auditions and trying to get in at the Comedy Cellar. And he still got that apartment.
Is that where he lives?
What?
Like
right
well,
now?
He's got a place. I think I shouldn't out him about
with
where
five
he lives.
Kids?
But no, I think they bought the place next door or whatever, but these, okay. he's on the same block.
Okay. Well, know? No, I just, I kept hearing, like, I've only met him once, but I kept hearing about, you know, every year a new kid and then everyone always talking about living in this one apartment. I'm like, damn, dude, how are you doing seven people in the apartment you've lived in that long?
Right.
Like, sounds pretty.
I think Tom Papa does that also.
Really?
I think they have an apartment downtown.
And he has two or three kids?
I think he's got two or three.
So that's when you're a man, is when you start having
multiples.
I think so. I think that, you know, I don't think it's a good idea to have one child. We all know only children, and they're...
Go ahead. Sorry, I was listening to you, elder.
Maybe it's different now with the younger only children. Maybe you're not stuck up, self-centered, overly doted on, precious,
Definitely
neurotic
not,
people.
Definitely not, dude. My parents
Because it
were,
used to be with the older people.
No, my parents are Eastern Bloc, Hungarian, escaped from communism. My dad's a forklift mechanic. My mother, a mentally ill lunatic. I was definitely not doted
Escaped
on.
from Hungary?
Yeah, in 1969
wow.
they escaped.
Wow.
So they're very hard knocks.
Prague Spring. The Russian tanks rolled in.
Right.
I was Czechoslovakia. I was just checking on you.
Can I ask you, how did you go from hate crimes, beating up black people in the streets, to being like a normal human that we see today? How did that
I
happen?
Was always normal. I mean, I had my father was in radio my whole life, so he was like a pretty big celebrity in New York.
Really?
He was like one of the top radio announcers in New York
really?
City my whole life. Yeah.
No
so we
shit.
Had, you know, we would walk, we'd go to all the best restaurants. It was like Mad Men. We'd go to like the best restaurants and there was a lot of drinking and my parents were out probably four or five nights a week. It was very social. We were out a lot. And but at the same time, we were very, you know, very family centric. You know, my parents felt very strongly about us and how they raised us. And, you know, we were raised Irish Catholic for better or worse. It definitely made you
Catholic. Good.
Yeah. I
we
think
approve.
It makes you fairly conventional. And, yeah. And I think you have a pretty strong compass built into you from a young age. So to me, having a family was always just, it was just a given. Yeah. And I think that it's probably not as much about responsibility as I think you're brought up like you see. I don't know Gaffigan's deal, but I bet he had a bunch of siblings because probably. Usually people that have a lot of kids came from that and they want to replicate it.
Sure.
And I think that a lot of people, if they don't have kids, they probably maybe had divorced parents or you know, have some kind of fear of, you guys are having issues with that?
No, I have divorced parents and I am so afraid of having kids because of that. But I see a shrink every week. Yeah. I really work it out. Like I see a really good psychotherapist and like I'm over it. I think, you know.
Are you ever over it or do you work with it?
You get over your story actually. I do find like the more I tell the story of what happened to you or your life, whatever, you become more and more detached from the emotional charge of it. So, yeah.
Do you find in therapy there's certain like flashpoints? Is there images that you had to deal with versus the overall narrative of your parents breaking up?
Flashes? You mean like instances that I have to get
like
over?
You know the time they told you they were leaving each other is that where the work is?
I guess because that's what you're dealing with are distinct memories of stuff. So like I do remember one of my first memories is my father putting me up on the kitchen counter when I was 4 years old and explaining to me mom and dad are getting a divorce. So you know, you start with that and you kind of
that's really I didn't even know that was one of your
really I never told you that
no
one of my early yeah definitely Yeah.
Why did he tell you versus them telling you together? I felt like that would be a healthier way to do it.
That would be, right? That would be.
So you had it all out with him and then, how much later did you talk to your mom about it?
I don't remember. I was four, so I don't really remember the chain of events. You only remember
your
that
dog
isolated
just farted, by the way.
Very
do you
intensely.
Smell it?
Oh,
holy
yeah.
Shit.
Holy I know. Shit.
That was nasty.
Yeah.
Oh, God. If it was mild, I would have kept my mouth shut thinking it was one of you.
Yeah.
But you would not have done that to me.
No.
Because his diet's been pretty treat heavy last couple of days.
He's enjoying it. He's getting in there right
now. And now he's licking his asshole. This is great. I'm glad I made it down to Redondo. This has really been a great experience.
Oh, my God.
No, but getting back to your parents.
Oh, no.
What?
Who did you live with then?
You know
mom?
What? Honestly, it's not so much divorce that fucks kids up, in my opinion. It's how the parents treat each other and talk about each other to the kid.
Right.
It's not so much. It's not the separation. It's just how you guys deal with it.
Yeah, I've seen a lot of really well-adjusted divorce kids now. Like my kids, like his best friend, their parents split up. And it sounds so corny, but like they really are like best friends. They put the welfare of the two kids ahead of their petty fights. And they you know, they each remarry. They were at each other's weddings. And I know for some people it's more difficult to maintain that. But for God's sakes, put the kids first. If you find yourself bad-mouthing your spouse to your kid, get your shit together.
That's the problem. You know? That's right.
Right.
That's exactly the issue. Yeah. Look who came here.
So who do you side with more now as an adult?
My father completely. Because my mom was such a nutbag that I kind of understand the split. You know what I mean?
Like when you say crazy, like...
Legit cray-cray.
Chemical
borderline.
Imbalance?
Yeah, oh yeah.
How would you diagnose her?
Borderline.
Oh no.
Schizophrenic.
They
say
that's the worst.
Yeah.
It's pretty bad.
Do you think it's the worst?
Yeah, I know somebody who's borderline. And what's difficult is that there is a complete denial of anything.
That's a problem.
Well, the problem is not just the denial.
It's always about you.
That's right. So you internalize all their shit as your shit until you work it out with
them. They're also incapable of
change.
Yeah. So
they cannot.
Never.
Shrinks have told me if they're. I know one friend of a shrink will not see borderline patients because they are incapable of any real change.
I know it's terrible
because it's got the symptoms of bipolar in the sense that they can get manic, they can get depressed, they can be aloof. But the difference is a bipolar person doesn't put you on a huge pedestal and then rip you down and fucking stomp on you.
And then hence why I love being a stand-up comedian, why that feels so great, right?
Oh, yeah.
Because your very worth is contingent on how you're going to do tonight out there. Today could be great, tomorrow not so great. Do they love me? Do they hate me? So it feels really good.
Because at this moment, if you can get them, then it's good. And it doesn't matter because tomorrow morning, it's going to be a different person anyway.
Right.
It's going to be a new show.
Right.
Wow.
Yeah. So.
So has she sought treatment at all?
No.
So this is just your armchair diagnosis of her.
This is through me being seeing a psychotherapist for years, and my psychotherapist hearing my stories, and my psychotherapist being
so
like,
nobody firsthand has ever diagnosed her.
It's not possible.
It's not possible.
She's so gone.
Right.
Like she won't even leave her house now. Like she's housebound. She won't use a telephone. She writes me cryptic letters in the mail because now email's not safe for her. So
yeah,
like it's pretty obvious if you read. What
well,
she
if you've read the newspaper, she's right.
Is that right?
Turns out the crazy people are all insane.
What do you say? What do you think?
Well, it turns out that the NSA is collecting information.
I did see. That's right.
So how does she pay the rent?
That I don't know. I know that she has like money from a divorce settlement. So
with your father or a second guy?
Negative second guy. Yeah. Okay. So I think she's cared for it financially. So that's why I'm not like racked with guilt over like, I don't take care of
her. Does she have people around her?
I don't think so.
You're not really in touch with
her
very much.
There are people that care for her, like, that are, you know, caretakers, caregivers, but I don't...
What's it like on Mother's Day? Do you feel...
Greg. I did, yeah, for the first few years. This Mother's Day, however, like, nothing. I didn't feel shit. Now, talk to me on a day where she tries to contact me. Like, this is the craziest thing she did. I don't think I've talked about this, but she sent me a letter to... an improv. Like I'm sitting in the green room first week of January. I'm at the improv in Kansas City and the manager's like, oh, this came in the mail for you. And I'm like, oh, what could this possibly be? A fan mail, maybe some, you know, neat thing. I open it and it's like a cryptic, crazy letter. So of course I'm like in the green room, like that kind of stuff is what tears me.
That's what's great about the manager at the Kansas City Improv. Let me hand you this prior to you going on.
Right.
They're really on top of it.
Well, he didn't know. Yeah. So anyway, but what
he
made
knew.
You crazy? You think?
Yeah.
This is going to fuck with you. Here you go.
So that sucked.
So it is, I hate to tell you, but it is genetic. Yeah. Do you ever feel traces of it?
Of which part? The borderline?
Yeah.
Yeah, in the beginning, I was like, when I first went in, I was like, whoa. I see myself reacting to people in certain situations the way that she did. And that's why I like actively work to not do that. But I mean, I have a healthy relationship. I have healthy friendships and marriage. So I don't think that I'm her
at
all.
Yeah, so Tom, do you ever get paranoid that she's going to end up like that? Because your mother probably wasn't like that when you were younger, right?
She was. She was always crazy. Yeah.
Okay.
No, I don't worry about it in that sense. You know, I mean, her reactions are pretty normal on the scale of, you know, human behavior.
Right.
So from
female human behavior.
Yeah, for female human behavior. I mean, you know, I've been around a lot of females and she lines up with the way they act, you know. So no, it's never been.
That's
like,
such a nice compliment. Yeah. I've been around other female humans, and she behaves in line.
No, I'm just saying, like it doesn't. You know,
I don't fear my own sanity. No.
Good
insanity.
Good.
I don't. I think I'm.
But
okay
you go to a shrink to deal with the past, not the
future.
What
about you? Do you see a shrink?
Oh yeah,
you do.
Oh, well,
long time.
Here we go.
Not currently, but I just finished a nice run. I'll go for a run with a shrink when I get. I have depression that I medicate.
Mm-hmm.
My family has it. My dad had it really bad. We have a lot of alcoholism in the family, mm-hmm. everybody, mm-hmm. and a lot of depression. It's very Irish. We're a classic
and
Irish.
And also genetic.
Totally.
That's something that you know.
Oh, right.
So you're on medicine now for it?
Right.
What do you take?
I don't choose to discuss my medication because when people listen, I don't want people to say, well, hey, this works for Greg Fitzsimmons, so I'm going to borrow this from my friend. I say, if you feel like you need help, go to a psychopharmacologist and get, get evaluated and you'll end up tweaking it and there's help. You can find the right thing, but don't experiment. But, and I exercise, I work out every day. That's the biggest thing.
That helps Tommy a lot.
Yeah. What do you do?
Well, I've done a bunch of different things, but
you're not,
in shape.
Thin. Right.
I started going to CrossFit thing. And it's extremely difficult, obviously. But what I was complaining about was that I said I haven't been in 2 weeks because of circumstances and how shitty I'm feeling.
Yeah.
And like I just, you know, for once, like either I'm out of town or I'm in town and I'm doing something while class is going on. And when I'm free, there's no class. I can still do other things, but I'm saying that like I haven't been there in a couple weeks. And
well, is it hard because cross training is so intense that CrossFit that you feel like you can't do something else. You have to just do that.
It, I do feel like there's not a substitute for it.
Right.
And like on the road, in hotels, I'll work out, but like, and I'll try to mimic things from the CrossFit class, even though I know I'm not doing anything close to that. But what I do find is whether it's CrossFit or just basic gym stuff, anything, I do find that when I'm, you know, not doing something active for a couple days in a row, I definitely feel it affect my mood and my, you know, just overall happiness.
Where does it hit you? Late in the afternoon? That's when it hits me, if I'm not exercising.
Yeah, I just, you know, I feel like I get grumpier and I don't sleep as well. Definitely don't sleep as well. So I'll be like, I'm tired. And then, you know, oddly enough, when I work out a lot, I feel more rested, you know.
It's amazing, isn't it, the human condition that we know that X equals Y. If I work out, I'm going to sleep, I'm going to eat better foods, I'm going to be in a better mood, I'll get more done. And then somehow you don't, I worked out, I've been working out a lot lately, and then I'll go a couple months.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden I get 4 o'clock, 4:30 rolls around, and I feel like I have glass coursing through my veins, like everything hurts.
Yeah.
And I'm depressed and I can't engage with my kids in any real way. And then I start working out, and in one day I go, holy shit, that's all I had to do. And the human condition is that we don't do that. If I eat lunch at 12:30, I'm not going to crash later in the day. All of a sudden it's fucking 3 o'clock. I didn't eat, and I'm miserable for the rest of the night.
No, wait. When did your depression start?
Oh, I can't remember not having it.
Really?
I struggle with it every day.
Since you were like little. Like
yeah, I was a loner. I read a lot, and I was always somebody who had a lot of really good friends, but needed a lot of time away from people.
Like they overwhelmed you?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I needed this space where I couldn't let anyone see how I really was. Even now, I I think stand-up is similar. You put out this front of, I'm the most happy-go-lucky, in control, fun guy. And then I get off stage and most nights I beeline to the hotel. I do not want to see a human being after the show.
Yeah.
And, so I think for me, it's when you say you've gotten over a lot of your stuff, like, I guess for me, maybe because it's not trauma as much as it's just built into the hard drive. If for me, it's like, I'll never get over it. It's something that I have to learn to live with.
I see. I see what you're saying. So it wasn't something mom and dad did.
Well, they beat me.
Did they really?
I got beat a lot. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, that didn't help. Thanks.
Right. Right.
That didn't put a little bounce in my step.
Yeah.
That didn't make me embrace authority figures very well.
Sure.
Beat the sadness out of you.
Right.
That's the Eastern Bloc method. Yeah.
Right.
Well, I was very depressed too from like 12 to 21. I was goth and I was like angry and all that. So
horn it.
No, because my problems were with my mother, not my father.
Okay.
So I wasn't looking to spite dad. Mm-hmm. I hated my mother. So I was more about rebelling. I had a mohawk. I shaved my head.
What music were you listening to?
Punk and goth. A lot of
punk. I don't know how old you are, so give me the year.
36. I'll be 37 next week.
So you were listening to like Dead Kennedys.
Yeah. Circle Jerks.
Right.
Crass. All that angry. I liked that
stuff.
See,
I missed that shit. And now, like, I didn't listen to it at the time. And now I'm finding it because of like, I have Sirius XM and they've got the Lithium
best.
Channel.
Lithium.
And they
I like
got
that one.
So 33. Much good shit. Right. Right.
Dark Wave. I like the Dark Wave.
Yeah. Yeah.
So are you a punk guy too?
No, I just respond to the energy of it now. I mean, you know, I was a big Ramones fan.
Yep,
I loved
the
Sex Pistols, but I mean, that was like first wave of punk. I missed that second wave of punk because once New Wave came along, I felt like punk was over. Like I considered like Elvis Costello punk and Patti Smith. And then it just lost its purity when I started to see it become a fashion and people, you know, all dressing the same and a lot of the lyrics being, you know, just the same arcane, like, saying outrageous shit for the sake of it. Whereas if you really listen to the Sex Pistols were really fucking, or you know, the Clash.
That's actually my
favorite
band. Very
intelligent, you know, out there stuff. And I find that punk, like any form of entertainment, eventually gets very homogenized.
Yeah, and they find a way to make a buck off of
it,
and then it sucks,
then it can come back. I'm amazed the fact that Green Day is called punk now. That's modern punk.
Okay, so I was in high school when those assholes came around, right. And I was extremely mad as a punker chick that was considered. Even Nirvana, I was like, no, I don't buy that.
And I wouldn't hate Green Day if the punk moniker weren't thrown around them. Now I fucking hate them.
Yeah.
Whereas Nirvana, I felt like was such a different energy than punk. I never remember them being called punk.
It was different. No, their first album, like I remember my punker friends were like, this is great. And I don't know why, but I did feel like even once they played that kind of stuff on MTV, it did feel a little different. It felt a little too commercialized.
Right. Yeah.
Anyways, so that sucks for you. And that's still your struggle. And does therapy help you at all? Like, because you're not really
talking through stuff. What do you mean when you
say
a run? Do you go, does that mean you switch off to a new person? A new shrink when you go on a run with a shrink?
No, well, yeah, I've gone through a number of them in my life, but there's a woman that I've gone to probably in the last, I don't know, in the last 7 or 8 years, I've probably gone where for 6 months to 9 months, like 3 times. And when I wrote the book, I came pretty close to a complete nervous breakdown. It was like I was at the time, I had a sitcom deal. Mm-hmm. I had a game show deal. I was writing on the staff of a TV show.
My life.
I was doing my radio show, my podcast, road work, and trying to write a book at the same time with 2 kids. And I got real close to the edge, man. It got dark. And I found this woman, thank God. And that's the first time I got on medication. And, you know, and it was, it worked, you know. And she's a resource that I go to when I feel like I'm starting to, I never get near that place again. But once you've been to that place, you get scared when you start drifting even towards it.
That's my problem because when I was like 14, that was my lowest point of my entire life. So that's a magic number for me. And I also, when I get depressed, I'm afraid of the feelings of sadness because I'm afraid I'll go back to that subconscious or unconsciously.
Well, because you weren't able to stop yourself then.
As a young person. Yeah. Like my parents, when I would tell them like, oh, I'm depressed. It was like, what do you got to be depressed about? This is a medic. Everything's great. Right. Like nobody knew how
so
to
you were
help.
All alone.
Right. And an only child. So that compounds.
So alone.
Yeah, exactly.
So what was your replacement for that? Where'd you find the intimacy?
Oh, I was lucky enough that I had pretty cool friends, just like fucked up goth. And
that is funny
friends.
When you think of goth, you think of this in real intense closeness. There was this great movie this past year called the something of being
The Wallflower.
Wallflower.
I can't even watch it because I'm too afraid of it.
I saw it. That's a great movie.
I watched it and I cried.
Yeah, that's why I
cried for 15 minutes when it ended. My wife was like putting her arms around me like, holy fuck, are you... Because I don't cry like that. But that movie...
I know.
It touched this intense existential isolation that kids at that age feel. And when they find kids like themselves that are there, you can't touch those bonds that are formed. You know, when they find this music that speaks to them and this anger. And so instead of being outcast for the first time in their lives, they feel... part of something. I mean, like Breakfast Club was obviously the pop
that was
example
my movie.
Of it, but
you're absolutely right. And it is that, and some kids get that, what you said, and then there's a lot of kids that never do, right? So that's even more isolating. So like you said, to find your own niche, like even that word, that existential angst, like you don't even know what that is when you're 13, but you just know like, I'm alone, profoundly alone in the world. What does this mean? It's so scary. It's so overwhelming. But then I studied philosophy in college, and that really helped too.
Oh, that made it worse for me.
Oh, really? Yeah.
Oh my God, existentialism sent me so fucking deep. Because as a Catholic, first I find out in high school, like all that shit that you believe. Guess what? I took a class in high school where they showed you where every parable in the Old Testament and New Testament you can find in previous like pagan texts. Like it's all these archetypal stories that aren't even fresh.
Yeah, I didn't even know that.
I was mind blown by that. And just as I was recovering, I get to college and they go, oh yeah. You know the other paradigms in life? Those are imaginary also.
It's pretty disenchanted.
I don't think most Catholics, especially the hardcore, I grew up very Catholic upbringing, even know about that. They don't even, I think a lot like my parents don't even know that those stories are taken from other
Noah's
texts.
Ark, the parting of the Red Sea, Adam and Eve is the oldest one in the book. And also almost every Messiah was born while there was one very bright star in the sky, mm-hmm. and which, of course, which is a sign of birth because it's the vernal equinox. It is the time in the spring where where the North Star is the lowest and brightest in the sky. It all goes back to pagan type of nature-based calendars and mythologies, you know, looking at the stars. And so there was nothing new about Jesus' birth.
Yeah.
Sorry, people that are listening. That are
didn't
still
know that.
Do
one.
You still practice today? Are you like in religion at
what,
all?
Catholicism?
Yeah.
I'm very, very curious about it. I still read a lot about Christianity, and I've sort of gotten into the Jewish. There's a book about I just listened to a book on tape with this guy that he goes through the Torah, the first. What is it, 8 books of the Old Testament?
Mm-hmm. Five.
And he goes through them and basically just breaks them down in the Quentin Tarantino-esque script that it really is. Like the absolute terror and horror of locusts being launched to kill people. And anybody that fucked with the state of Israel, the people of Israel. It wasn't a state yet.
Right.
But the Old Testament was like the U.S. It was like nobody better fuck with Israel.
Yeah.
Or there were hellfires. There were entire villages that God brought hell upon. I mean, it's fucking vicious, the Old Testament.
Yes. The God of the Old Testament is a hateful, spiteful piece of shit, basically. And then the New Testament, he's like, hey, I love everybody. Jesus is great. Yeah, it's very scary.
That's why when people talk about the Bible, I always say, well, which fucking Bible? Because you're talking about two very different stories and two different tones. And the people that, you know, today would call themselves Christians, I mean, it's trite to even say it, but like they don't exemplify anything from that book. You know, helping the poor and turning the other cheek and
being accepting of others.
Right.
Inclusive? Nah.
He was a socialist. I mean, Jesus was a pure, straight-up socialist.
Right, of
which,
course.
Which, by the way, this country was also when it started. I mean, people forget now how much the Founding Fathers were hell-bent on trying to not replicate these dynasties, these aristocratic families that could hand down land and money to their ancestors. I mean, this whole thing about the death tax where, you know, it's supposed to be called the estate tax. And there was this whole PR campaign where they started calling it the death tax, which changed the favorability rating of it from 40% approval or disapproval to like 70% disapproval because they started making people believe it was going to happen to them. Well, it's supposed to happen to rich people. It's like Thomas Jefferson fucking laid it out. It was like, if you want capitalism, I mean, Ayn Rand capitalism, a free, like, let's come up with the most cutting edge hardcore, like, what's the next Silicon Valley? It's going to come from people that need to work for a living.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And the people that are predisposed to be born into a wealthy family, is it nature or nurture that made your parents successful, that will make you successful? Well, if your parents are both rich, you got nature because that spooge that went into your mom was fucking grade A stuff, IQ, you know, A-type, good looks. Then on top of it, you got nannies and private school and European vacation. Okay, so you hit the lotto twice. Why do you get it a third time with the fucking money when he dies? Can't you make it on your own with all those advantages? I say, I've been thinking about this the other day. I'm writing a blog about it. 100% estate tax. Mm. No income tax. Whatever you make, you have fun with that shit. Because when you spend it, what happens? Goes back into the economy, which is all these fucking right-wingers talk about as well. It's got to go back in the economy. Well, spend it all. But when you die, kids are out. You can't.
I love that idea.
You can't give them
That'd
shit.
Great.
When they die.
Bill Gates' father is a big proponent of this. He's one that actually made it big news initially. He's a big believer in that these super wealthy, especially the billionaires like his son, shouldn't be able to leave billions to their offspring.
It's the worst thing for the economy.
Yeah. I only think that. I mean, that's kind of that's definitely the big picture of it. I think if you get to know children of extremely wealthy people, or grown-ups of extremely wealthy of their parents, you find that I think a lot of times the ones that I've met that are extremely wealthy, you find that a lot of them they have this real lack of a sense of accomplishment because they go they go through life, the life that you describe with all these advantages, and then they're adults. They've just had, you know, 8-9 figures net worth, and it's like, yeah, you know, I bought these 5 houses and I got boats, and you're like, and then you see that they're like, yeah, I'm going to buy the next thing that comes out too, because I just don't know what to do with myself.
Right.
Like,
give those people an opportunity to live a life.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
You're basically just, you know, compartmentalizing what, you know, what their life will be and what the world is out there. And I also, you know, to me, it feels like if you can prep a kid as well as you would have the resources to do, I really do think that same person you're describing could be incredibly influential and could be a real leader. Like my kids, I think they're very fortunate. You know, they were born white.
Yeah, thank God. That's the best, right?
Yeah.
High five.
Got some money, intact parents, their health. And my thing with my kids is, no, you're not just going to be good students. You're not just going to be, you know, polite. You're going to be leaders. It's upon people like you who are so fortunate that you go into the world and you put some positive energy into it. And so I think that they wouldn't have that opportunity. Say I were successful in my career, they would never really know what it was like to have to work.
If you were a multimillionaire.
You don't think I'm a multimillionaire?
No. I've done shows with you.
That goes that whole premise.
I do think the rich kids I grew up with, I grew up in the San Fernando Valley.
Oh.
Yeah. Amongst like celebrity kids, like people with real fuck you, showbiz money,
yeah,
doctor money, mm-hmm. like all kinds of money. I grew up in a 2-bedroom apartment in Tarzana. Like,
oh,
I did
no.
not come. It was fine.
Princess.
No, it was good.
No, it wasn't fine. Your dad was aloof and your mother was crazy.
Her dad was crushing.
No, my dad's awesome. Mm. I get
oh, really?
Yeah. Crushing.
Your dad
plus.
Was?
Still it. Yeah. He's
oh,
a real
he's
playboy.
Good looking, Eastern European,
charismatic. Yeah. He's a business owner.
You ever walk in on him?
Yeah, of course. Yeah, ouch, come on.
How
party
old?
Party in the '80s.
How old?
You know, formative, third grade, maybe around there.
Naked ass pumping.
Sure. You never saw your parents.
Catholics. You know, no
about
way.
You, Tommy?
No.
Charlie and Top Dog. Never.
They have a story of when I was very young. Walking in, but it's literally not accessible. I blocked it out. Like I don't recall it. I really don't recall it. I was probably.
do you recall? Did he see you?
Yeah, and then he yelled, "Get out!" Yeah, like that's what parents
get out.
Look. My parents are way more. I think hard. Well, no, you had hard parents that beat. My parents didn't beat me, but they're like.
I'd rather
tough.
They beat me than fuck in front of me.
They didn't fuck. He didn't like fuck in front of me. Like
he
I walked
strokes,
in.
Cup one or two strokes.
Never.
One and a half strokes.
After he saw you,
right?
Get out of here.
Right. Yeah. Get out of here. Throw me that towel. Get out of here.
Deep in this pussy. Get out of here.
Right.
How dare you guys? I was gonna make a point. That the wealthiest kids were A, the laziest that I grew up around.
Jews.
B.
What are you, fucking Fred Norris?
What, I can't play a drum?
No.
Why?
It's ridiculous. It's just not the spirit of a podcast.
Oh, dude, you've never heard this podcast.
No, this is the most talking we've ever done. We haven't even done our show
intro. Yeah, we didn't
intro
do intro
yet.
Or anything.
But this is so good. That, why would you do
no,
something
that's
else?
Why
are you bothering me right now?
Well,
why
you
are
you drop doing? In a stupid fucking... What do you put in like
oh, that's
a
not
crazy
even...
whistle and a fart?
There's no,
yeah. You want to hear the fart?
Yeah, do the fart.
We got all kinds of stuff.
There's actually not a fart one.
There's... Well, you know what there is.
If I had noise, that'd be the only one I'd have.
There's the all aboard.
There's that.
Do you talk about bowel movements with your wife?
With her? Yeah.
Yeah. You do. You guys are open.
Very,
what about farts?
Very, very, yes.
I like this.
Right.
Because I think that I don't like it when people hold that in. I think couples who hold in farts hold in secrets.
So judgy.
It's a lie. It's a fucking lie. How do you live with somebody and have real intimacy and then withhold?
Well,
that
I think
stuff.
It was Kierkegaard said that all kitsch, all bad art mm-hmm. comes from the denial of the existence of shit.
Did he really?
How do you make art when you won't?
I'd understand anything else that guy said. That was pretty good.
Yeah. He could be quotable. True. I knitted it into a throw pillow.
Can I play another drop?
Do you poo in front of your wife?
She does in front of me, and that actually bothers me. She's a little too relaxed.
Too
and
much.
Here's the crazy thing. When she takes a dump, she crosses her legs.
Oh,
what?
Stars.
That's a lady.
That is a lady.
Really?
Yep.
Now, how does that... Let me see how that feels to... Does that help her? Does that?
No, it's just she's comfortable. She leaves a, you know, like we have a bathroom that has a toilet with a door that closes, and she keeps it open, and then just sits there and talks to me, and it makes me. I mean, I'm fine. I'll talk about it. I'll look at it when she's done.
You'll look at her brown.
Yeah.
Does she look at her brown too? Or she makes you look at it because she's afraid to.
She doesn't make me do anything. Okay. But if there it's there,
you enjoy
if it's
it.
There, I'll check it out.
Okay.
Do you like looking at it?
Nope.
No.
No.
Do you show her your browns?
I yesterday dropped one down that I called her in to look at because it was so long.
Right. And I hadn't had
a long one in a while. Yeah. I've been having this series of fucking stringy, nasty, like almost they look fuzzy. Like there's a fuzz on the outside of it. It's so soft. This was like a cock coming out. Yeah. It was like a long, thick cock came out of my ass, and it felt so good.
Yeah.
And I called her in, and she wouldn't come in, and I was holding my index fingers apart like, you got to see it. You got to see it.
Yeah.
And it was only because she was running out of the house that she didn't come in.
Oh,
she didn't come in and see
she
it?
She didn't come in and see
oh,
it.
Oh, that's disappointing. That's disappointing.
Right.
Yeah.
But it is amazing. I mean, I guess it's the you got little feelers in your asshole, man. That feels good.
Yeah. To poop, to brown.
Do you like ass play?
No.
Even a finger? You don't like a finger back there?
I tolerate a little pressure, on the finger. Not more than one knuckle.
You work the manicure, make sure you're not tearing anything up back there?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Make sure.
That's
the
key.
Yeah.
Do you like butt play?
Do I? Mm. I don't.
That's a yes. I hesitated.
When I was a younger man, I did. I had a woman once was performing oral sex on me, and just went back there.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought I'd be horrified. And you know, there was a moment of like, what the fuck,
right?
But I couldn't believe how quickly that went away, and I just was, you know, like, this is the greatest feeling in the world.
Yeah.
And she continued to crank it with her hand while she did that.
Yeah.
What do you call that? A trombone?
Rusty trombone.
I think they have to be from behind you this way to do that.
Oh, and
how else? Where else would she be? If her face was in my ass.
She could be underneath you, you know, like that.
Wait.
You pull your legs back.
No. She was using her hand on your peener and then. Finger and butthole?
No, face. She was eating his ass.
She was blowing me.
This whole time, I thought you had a finger in there.
It went down. You know how you have a crease? You know how in your taint, there's a crease that runs down the center of it?
Yes.
Isn't that amazing? It's the only crease in your body. I used to think when I was little that like God made us and that's where he sewed us up. Uh-huh. That's the one mistake and he hid it down there. But but the man's testicles, your ball sack has that same crease.
Mine does, yeah.
Her scrotum has the same crease.
Your testicles?
Yeah.
You have testicles?
Women don't have the taint crease. I don't. Do I have a taint crease?
I don't really look at your taint. I don't know. I'm always just trying to get.
Do you guys want to go inside and come back and tell me?
I'll do
a tight five. I know you guys are finding out tonight after I leave.
We'll look at your taint.
Of course.
Sure.
You've seen it.
I don't know
why you're pretending.
Right?
Here's the thing. I would like to pleasure my husband with a finger or a mouth part, but I'm so afraid, Greg, because he's very hairy. And it's very hot and rainforesty, you know, like I graze his butt like a little and I get so afraid because I feel like I don't know if something's going to leap out or if it's like hot and brown or something. I don't know.
But I would imagine you take a shower first.
Right. But the shower, I don't know. I feel like it's still so hot and the heat comes off of him.
You can't, a little water and soap can't undo.
Yeah, the brown that comes out. Because I hear his dumps through the door. We don't look at each other.
Right.
But my husband's browns are so violent. Like one time, it's even in his act now, he was making a brown and I could hear it from the living room.
Yeah.
You've seen the setup, right?
Yeah.
And I could hear it and it sounded so violent that when he came out, I was like, should we go to the hospital? Because I think something's wrong. And he's like, what do you mean? This is a normal dump for me.
Right.
That's why I'm afraid of it.
It's almost like in Beauty and the Beast when she walks in and he's eating like a fucking goat and he's ripping it apart and there's blood and she can never kiss him again after that.
I guess
you're the beast in that scenario.
It's pretty much that, yeah.
That's
but
really
it is difficult.
Analogy.
I could imagine just looking at you that your asshole is
so
very,
hairy.
Very hairy.
just from looking hot. At me?
Well,
guys?
Because you're so a you're a thick guy. You're hairy,
yeah. Meaty,
and you know yeah. you.
Look, here's husky. The thing. I'll be honest with you. I've gone through life not expecting my ass to get a lot of play.
Right.
I mean, it's just something that.
Well, the first time she did it, though, were you pleased or?
I haven't
out?
Done it. I haven't done it.
You haven't done it?
I won't do it. I'm afraid.
Oh, you've grazed.
I've yeah, grazed it. I've played last... with the ideas. I've touched around.
Yeah.
I can't.
I've had it done.
I'm scared.
I've had it done my
wow,
younger
revelation.
Days.
Yeah.
You didn't know that.
Yeah. I didn't know that.
I've had it done my younger
been together
days.
How many
was
years?
Was it like a hooker? Because what's funny is, you know, when you're young, like you get to first base, like you make out and you tell right. your friends, and then like second base is like exactly 2 months later.
Yeah.
And then you finger her, but it's like with her pants on. And
yeah.
But like when you get to her, to a girl putting her face on your asshole, like was that following the other stages?
It was the first time we ever hooked up.
Are you kidding
wow.
me? That was a prostitute.
Yeah. It was not a prostitute. It was
in
not
Peru?
A prostitute.
When you were 13?
Walk no. us through the evening. How
yeah.
did you meet her?
Yeah.
I met her at a
oh
bar.
My God. I'm going to be
in,
ill.
In
you know we're married, right, Greg?
LA,
this
yeah.
guy and me?
Okay. I'm trying to help your marriage.
Yeah. Well, yeah. I doubt that.
In LA, yeah. And
you I meet mean, her in
it was,
a bar?
It was actually, she was friends of a friend of mine.
Okay.
And then,
let me figure this out.
No.
Someone we're currently friends with?
No, not okay. you would never ever. You've never
I
met
know
him.
Who it is?
You have
so,
no idea.
So you go back to your apartment with her.
Her place.
Her yep. place, and you yeah. start fooling around.
Yep.
And you go downtown on her first.
She
I just got the chills from being sick. Yeah.
She let me see. She went down first. Actually, she went down first.
And while she was Why? Down there,
yeah,
she took a leg and threw it over, or how did she get her face down there?
Yeah, good question, she, Greg. Look at you.
She did just, she go Roman Greco?
She she was very suggestive with the way that she pushed my legs up.
Are you kidding yeah. me? Like, she did the baby?
Yeah, the baby move.
Oh, God.
What a whore.
And then
weren't your balls hanging over the entrance?
Yeah,
she pushed him to the side. She yeah, moved him over to the side.
She was
oh
really in charge.
God.
And then face, and then
I'm gonna be sick.
Finger. Well, way inside where I jumped, and then it was kind of thing where I was like, oh, I guess this is.
Oh, really? You jumped because someone shoved a whole finger in your butthole?
Yeah, but then she continued to blow and finger.
Oh, my.
And then also fingered my ass while we were doing it.
Did the mouth go on your ass?
Yeah, but she didn't like spend a lot of time there. It was just
it
more
sounds
like
she had an agenda.
Yeah.
That's the thing, because it's one thing if like, you know, it's
she
a hot, sweaty night
liked,
and you're grabbing someone's ass and your finger accidentally grazes and then you start thinking, oh, I'm drunk. What? But this sounds like she brought you home and blew you just so she could put her finger in your
I
dirty ass.
I was much thinner back then too, just to give, so just for a visual. And then
were you thinking at the time when your last bowel movement had been and how
thank you. Oh, I was going to ask.
Well, you would
I got distracted pressure. Of that. What happened though, what I did remember was that later on in the sex, she demanded a finger in her ass.
She wanted to reciprocate.
Yeah, she wanted to reciprocate.
So, do you think that was her intention? Like, I'm going to do this to you, and then you got to give it back?
She wanted the finger.
The goal?
It was either that, it could have been a face-saving, excuse the pun, where she now has done it to you.
Uh-huh.
So for her to run into you at the bagel shop, you got to have blood on your hands, so you got to have shit on your finger as well. She needed you to do it. She didn't want you to do it, but she needed you to do it. Like you know how in the mob they make you kill somebody or in a gang?
Yeah.
Because then you've all killed somebody.
Do you
this
know
was
what
like
I,
getting beaten into her little asshole in, gang.
It was. And you know what I remember distinctly about that more than anything? I remember her, I remember laying in bed, and I remember her going to the bathroom. I remember the sink running. Like, you know, you pick, remember little
post-sex.
Details.
Post-sex.
Yes, I remember her in the sink, and I just remember falling asleep, and the next morning when I got up, my finger was covered in dry shit.
Oh, stop
the
finger,
I remember it like
what,
it was
you don't
yesterday.
Wash your hands or
I
your
didn't.
Face or you brush your teeth before you go to bed?
Not when I was not that.
At her house.
Yeah, I just
oh,
passed
right.
out. So I remember I woke up and I was like, holy shit, and there was dried shit all over the finger that had been really far up her ass.
Did you stick it in her face and
like,
scream
wake
shame?
Up. I said, that's your alarm, yeah. No, I was like, oh, I was pretty horrified. I ran.
So she knew
that's a stranger.
When she So in other words, she led you to do it to her, but there's no way she didn't know that her, because that's a dirty asshole.
Yeah.
That means the chamber was, she knew was caked.
Yeah.
She knew. For sure she knew.
She's
yeah.
a dirty girl.
Yeah. Yeah. And it reminds me of another girl who.
Oh my God. Another one. Simmons, why do you have to ask about?
I didn't ask about the second one.
No, but you led. You know, you held his hand down this path. You encouraged him, and now.
The hand has been let. I have let
your,
go.
Your
the
dirty
hand.
Brown hand.
Neither of us wants him to tell this next story.
Are you sure?
No, tell the story.
No.
Another girl. What happened?
No, of one night, because she always knew people she slept with.
Stressed
Who?
Out.
Christina.
You know why?
She always dated people
why?
And slept with people she dated.
Do you know why, sir? I went to Catholic school after I got kicked out of public school, private Catholic, all girls, taught by Irish nuns.
Yeah.
I'm a good girl. Okay. I didn't throw it around. I didn't whore it out. I know everybody I've had sexual intercourse with. You know what I'm saying? Like, I don't want to have a stranger's feces on your finger.
It's very,
not, it's unacceptable
it's,
to me.
It's I
weird.
Think it's felony in a lot of states, actually. Literally. You could have gone to the police department if you were in like Texas and held up that finger and said, we've had a crime here. Get CSI asshole on the phone.
Yeah. And I remember it was this finger, babe. This one right here.
The one that your wedding ring is?
Yeah, I was going to say.
No, this one here.
Yeah, isn't it funny, though, that when you finger somebody, so you gross. Always use the finger?
Yeah.
As what opposed do you mean? What's the finger?
Well, the
finger?
Thumb would really be, if you think about the way your vagina is built.
Right.
The thumb, if you go underhand and you get the thumb in, the knuckle really would be riding on the clitoris opposed to the middle finger. Now you got a palm, concave. Mm-hmm. You got no contact with the clitoris whatsoever.
But the thumbnail, that's what
well,
I'm
again,
thinking.
Well, again, good grooming is crucial.
Wait, so was your, when you got your ass eaten by the lady you're talking about, is that the last time that happened? That one, that lady?
Amateur.
Yeah. Oh, so it's been in the pros too?
No. Okay. There's no pros. Now, I felt like it was cross it off. You know, I think that I would have been so concerned about hygiene during anything like
with
that.
With a stranger, maybe?
Yeah, that seems... Have you had him tested?
Way back,
the
before
most
we got married.
The most terrifying
way
one
back.
Was when I slept with a girl who
life.
I knew was a runaway, and I knew she'd had drug problems.
This is a true story, too.
Because you were her pimp?
No, I mean, like, I met her... I was in North Africa... She was
there you
just
go.
When the AIDS meter couldn't go higher.
Or Haiti, right.
And
she was a Haitian
was
prostitute.
A German punk rock. And then, you know,
great.
We slept together, no protection.
Good.
And then the next day I confronted her. I was like, I'm really nervous about what happened. And she was like, and her English was like, so-so. And she was like, nervous? Why nervous? And I was like, you know, because she was like, no, I take medicine for no babies. Mm. And I was like, that's not what I'm nervous about. Mm. Like, I didn't know how to say, like, I'm nervous that you carry diseases and gave them to me. Mm. And she was like, no, like, take this, you'll feel better. So she gave me a pill, which was actually like a Xanax, like to calm down.
Okay, so this chick's
she gave me, and then
a
I had
little loose.
Sex with her again. Before,
unprotected
again.
Oh my life.
Yeah.
No, I did make
Jesus.
Him when we started
this was
dating.
A long time ago.
How many partners would you say you've had?
Not that many. That's the great
more than 25?
No, less. For sure.
Greg, I've asked him several times for an exact number because I know my exact number because I'm a moral Catholic.
I'm going to guess your
woman.
Number.
I'm not going to confirm
eight,
or deny.
Eight.
I'm not going to confirm or deny on this show.
You just smiled when I said eight. So that means
well,
it was eight.
I will not confirm or deny.
Why have you not confirmed or denied?
But you refuse to tell me an exact number, and it's so fucking irritating. I've known you for a million years.
Well, how do you know he knows the exact number? It doesn't sound
who
like
does
he's
it?
The
how
most distinguishing gentleman.
Obviously, right? You know what? Now that you say it like that, I think you're right.
Do you even know the exact number?
I don't. I know for sure that it's below 25, and I know that you sound like, well, if it's below 25, why don't you know the exact number? It's literally the kind of thing where I'm like, I go through almost none were... relationships or somebody that I slept with more than a couple times. Many were one.
God, that's so sad.
I know.
Really?
Yeah.
So you never got into a nice groove of sex with a woman until you got older.
Right. Right.
So you weren't very, when he met you, he probably wasn't very good.
Actually, no. He was the best, which
really?
Is why I was really into him.
Where do you think you picked up the skills?
getting his ass eaten by a stranger.
No, I think honestly, this sounds. I don't know if this sounds completely ridiculous, but I think without, you know, we were both fairly young when we met each other, and you can be. I mean, I did have one person that I slept with, although fairly young, for a couple of years. So I did have that, but then after that, you know, that ended when I was probably 20. Right, so you're a young adult, and then between 20 and 25, I slept with, you know, I don't know, a dozen or so just fucking Sally wagons, and then that was it.
Were any of them, from what you can remember, mm-hmm. were any of them like disappointed by your performance?
Honestly, I swear to you, no, I can't. I think the only one where it might have been disappointed, I think she was disappointed that I wanted to talk. That was a girl that picked me up at a bar in New York City.
What were you doing, your act?
No, I think she was like, her and her friend picked up me and my friend on St. Patrick's Day in New York City, took us back to their apartments into separate rooms, and I think they were like, these two fuck demons are just going to destroy us.
Right.
And sex was just very, fine. And then I was like, I don't remember. I just remember like talking, and she was like, we can go to bed now. And I was like, oh, all right. Yeah. Like I'd met her that night 2 hours earlier.
Right.
And then
you were inside of her body. It's normal. I don't know why this generation thinks that that's like, it's not normal.
I'm sorry, which generation?
You forget that Greg is from the
right.
The old time.
In my day, you could get
in the 20s and 30s.
You could get the gout from fucking a young lady.
Wait, what's your? Were you just a pussy crushing machine?
Yeah,
you were. You did a lot.
Started
of
Started at a very young age.
How young are we talking?
No, I mean not like I learned. It's not that it was that young when I lost my virginity, but the frequency of it after that. I mean, I was probably 15 when I lost my virginity.
That's pretty young, man.
But then it was like I started putting up some pretty big numbers. I was always a quantity over quality guy, though.
Is your number really high?
It's pretty high.
Is it over 50?
Wow.
Okay.
That's a yes.
Wow. So over 100?
Wow.
Wow.
To me, it was about finding a chick I could hang out with, drink with, have fun. Didn't have to babysit her all night like some other guy is going to swoop in and pick her up. No one's picking her up. She's mine.
Yeah, yeah.
I can go shoot some pool. She's going to be standing by the jukebox later.
Yeah.
And we're going to have a few laughs.
Yeah.
And we're going to have sex.
Yeah.
And she's got big tits because she's overweight.
Oh.
That was my play.
That's your wheelhouse. Yeah. That was your thing.
Absolutely.
That's great. But
and
then,
were you in a lot of relationships too?
I got into monogamous relationships when I got into college, but I cheated. I cheated like it was a varsity sport.
Really?
Yeah. I almost feel like I had relationships because the cheating was so much better.
Oh, wow.
In college.
That's interesting.
Yeah, really, that's what college was like. Yeah.
Really?
Now, how do you reconcile that with your Catholic guilt?
It was terrible. I felt terrible about it. I felt really guilt-racked by it. As a matter of fact, like, there's no way I ever could have gotten married if I didn't know 100% that I would never cheat on her. Like, I was so disgusted by cheating and what it felt like that it was like Clockwork Orange, you know, when they're forced to watch that movie and they're nauseated by it. Like the idea, like when I'm on the road of like some fucking skank will flirt with me or something, and I get like almost nauseous with the thought.
Because you've done it. It's awful.
And it's so much to lose. I have so lucky. I have the most amazing wife and great kids, and I can see the rest of my life.
So what's happy. The big deal? Just throw it away, you know?
If a girl was going to put her face in my ass, I think maybe.
You think you would?
That would probably be the only circumstance. Do you have her number still?
I actually don't even remember her name, so I couldn't tell you.
You don't, wait a minute. You don't even remember the name of the woman that put you up like a little baby and then put her mouth in her butthole?
I have code names for ones I remember. I remember the real short girl. Oh, I remember punk rock girl. I remember the beach girl. I remember dirty Asian. I remember...
What was the short girl's nickname?
Short girl,
Sally.
They called her Shorty Rock. I think because she banged a bunch of black guys too.
Great.
uh, So
so you got you, you're at 24 with an asterisk.
Great.
I think so.
Great.
Something like that. But here's what I want to get into, though. I wanted to ask you this. This is so different from our show, by the way. I feel like you did an old pro move, by the way. You did. You know you did, right?
Yeah.
You came in here. This is what old fucking pros do.
Yeah, they guys, take over.
They do. They make the show. Yeah. Like, that's what they do when they do radio. They're like, I'll come in and I'll make
it's
the show.
Move.
It's a really good
I'm
move.
It's
a
strong
move.
Like,
it is yeah. a strong move.
It's you, you inject yourself into the host, and then the host begins to actually do cell reproduction of you
yeah.
until it actually eats them from the inside.
Yeah.
It's really good.
Yep. This is not our show, but it's much more interesting right now. Absolutely. But I do want to ask you this because I feel like the times that I have seen you, first of all, you, did you grow up in the city then? Is that where you were?
Just outside the city.
And then did you start stand up there or in Boston?
No, I went to college in Boston.
BU?
Yeah. Yeah.
My sister went to BU. One of my sisters went to BU.
You were smart. You weren't that much of a fuck up in high school. Then you had to get
got
good
the
grades.
Distinguished Alumni Award from Boston. You're the youngest person to ever get it.
And you said your father was a famous radio broadcaster.
Right.
Now, I know some a little, I guess, not much, but that wasn't Stern's father a radio personality as well?
Right, he knew my dad.
So they knew
no.
each other.
Right.
And was his dad well known or no?
He was, you know, it was, I would imagine it was a union gig back then, I'm pretty sure. And my dad did a lot of commercials, and that's where he knew him from.
Okay.
And, you know, and then Howard knew my dad from, you know, watching him. Like when Howard came up, he would attack William B. Williams and Gene Klavan and Imus and all these guys that were big mm-hmm. before he was big mm-hmm. because that was his MO. He attacked them and then people noticed him. And
yeah.
So he was pretty mean about my dad and some of the stuff he said. Like my mother to this day, I can't bring up Stern's name.
Really?
Yeah. Wow. And my dad saw what Stern was doing. He didn't like it, but he got what he was doing.
Guys that are kind of in it sort of get the radio game, though. Like that, you know, like...
Yeah, but it was a different style of radio. It hadn't been done like that before. I think people treated each other with respect. And then, you know, Stern introduced this new style of radio that obviously changed the game. But he was very... When I started doing Stern, he was very respectful about my dad. And when my dad died, because my dad died pretty young, he eulogized him very beautifully.
Stern did?
Yeah.
Oh.
He talked about him in a very nice way. And
that's nice.
He's always been, I think he's always kind of looked out for me in a way, Stern.
Really? That's nice.
Because of my dad, yeah.
Now, you started in Boston. Was it right after college or in college? That you started?
In college.
In college. And then how long out there, do you go to New York after that or do you come here?
Yeah, I graduated and I spent like 2 years just doing stand-up in Boston. Then I started driving down to the city on like a Sunday mm-hmm. and then coming back to Boston for the weekends. And I did that for probably a year and a half.
Mm-hmm.
And then I moved to New York after that.
And how long in New York?
I was there for 8 years.
And then here?
Then here.
Because the thing I think, and this is definitely probably from, I don't know if you were always like this, but when I see you now, which isn't that often, but I see you every once in a while in clubs out here, is you seem like you use every spot that you do as really a chance to work. What I mean by that is like a lot of comics do spots and it's kind of like, I'm just going to run this again and again and again. And you, I feel like every time that I've seen you, you've had like a pen and a paper and like you'll have, you know, like it just seems like you're, you know, working, like you're
right.
I have this idea and I'm working it out or I have this and like, it's good. It's fun. It's good to watch other comics actually work when they're doing spots.
Right. Thanks. Yeah. No. I think I learned a lot from like watching Dave Attell, you know, coming up in New York and seeing that, you know, he always had, and I saw him often enough that I knew which jokes were brand new, which ones he'd been working on for a month, which ones he, you know, I could see how he cycled material in, mm-hmm. and I saw that that's the kind of comedy that I, you know, that I really wanted to do, mm-hmm. And that, you know, for me to go to a club, like, I don't understand why you would go to a club to mail in a set. You know, I'll stay home if I'm not getting paid any money and I got to drive mm-hmm. into town. It's like, you know, and it's the same thing on the road. If I'm doing a set, I've always got a piece of paper in my pocket mm-hmm. with a bunch of, you know, new jokes. I tape every set. I listen to every set still. And that to me is like, it's like, I don't know why you would do it other than to do it like that. There's no...
Yeah, it's great.
There's no, like, I don't, I get really, really bored and I hate myself if I'm up there doing a set and I got nothing
it's
new.
It's the thing that
it's like
keeps me turning over stuff is nothing more than boredom.
Right.
Like people are like, well, you did an hour last year. Like, I'm like, but literally, if you're on the road as much as I'm on the road and you're doing 5 or 6 hour sets a week, mm-hmm. week after week, I don't know how, like, I literally go, I stopped doing that joke for no other reason that I can't say it anymore.
Right.
And so that's why I came up with a new joke. That's the thing that does it.
Can I ask you this? So you record every set,
right?
Like what, on your iPhone or something?
Yeah.
And then when do you listen to that?
If I'm on the road, then the next day I get in the bathtub and I sit in a hot bath and I listen to the set.
Are you being serious?
Yeah, the notebook.
The bath is like your place.
Yeah. I just chill.
Okay.
And I write notes on the jokes, and then I, it depends. It's like if I'm at a club for the week, usually Thursday night, I really throw a lot at the wall. Like I do tons of new shit, and I record it, and then I really go through it, and I start to like take the whole set and insert stuff into it, and you know, I start to develop. Like I like to work, you know, small to big, you know, take one really good joke and then extend it and then add a thought like it. And, you know, I wish I could just think of a topic and then write out like 10 pages of notes on a topic and then figure out a bit. But I think for me, it's more like, I need the safety of knowing this one joke works, and then I can add to it. And then I can build. And then eventually, like once it's a 5-6 minute bit, then I'm like you, then it's like, okay, I'm sick of saying it. I've got it. And then if I'm, and then like, I just did a 1 hour special. Then it was like, it was 4 bits. It was really,
Oh wow.
But it started as
did
jokes.
You just did a special. Is it like that? Isn't out yet? Is that what you mean?
No, it's coming out on Comedy Central.
Great.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Yeah. So
where'd you do it?
Actually in the town I grew up in Tarrytown, New York, there's this theater built in 1885. Beautiful, like 1200 seat theater with a balcony and you know, all as a matter of fact, you know, Boardwalk Empire.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. When there was a theater scene, they shot it there. And so so it was very gratifying, and it felt like putting that material, like, good, I don't have to do that again.
And that's the thing is that's now too, like, it. You can do, you know, specials, or you can record an album or whatever. And I think now, especially when you're in such control of what to do with your stuff, you can literally get it recorded and know that it's down, and then like move on to and know that it's recorded, and you can put it out, control it yourself, and you can work on your next hour after that.
I mean, look at Stanhope. I mean, it's incredible. That guy has been doing that for so many years.
Oh yeah.
And he's just, and it's not forced. This guy just spews out smart, funny shit.
Yep.
And then he has the sense to record it and put it out, and you know,
he's got
to
be double digit albums, right?
Probably. Yeah.
I wonder what one of those royalty checks looks like for Doug Stanhope.
Yeah. Oh yeah. For people don't know, you get these checks from SiriusXM alone. You can get these pretty massive checks.
It's pretty amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It's nice. But I mean, if you're doing 11 albums or whatever, Jesus,
I know.
It's a lot of
That's
play.
That's great.
Yeah.
Especially, yeah. I'm gonna record one, I think, in September, and I'm gonna do it on my own for the first time because Tommy did his on his own. And
I did, like, yeah.
It's such a. Do you do your own?
What?
Or do you release through a company?
Like for
I've only done one CD in my life. I never wanted. I tried a few times to do it, and I always hated it.
See, this is what I was gonna ask you about recording yourself, because the reason I hate I hate doing CDs is because A, it's so final. And I hate listening to myself.
Right.
And that's my self-loathing stuff that's built into me.
Yeah.
Like, so after a set, I'll take copious notes. I'll remember what I said that worked, and then I'll take notes right after.
Yeah.
But I so dream of recording the set and then listening to it the next day. But I have such issues with hearing myself.
Right. Well, I don't have a problem with listening to myself. I think the problem I always had with the CDs was just that... I would record it, and then by the time I had edited it, the bits had changed.
Yes.
And I felt like they were better, and then
the
I didn't
finality.
Want it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's so hard.
That
yeah.
definitely. I don't think that if you continue with the bit, then that never changes.
Right.
Like, in other words, if you kept doing the special you recorded,
right,
6 months from now, you'd be like, fuck, I got to re-record the special.
Yeah.
You got to stop doing it.
Dump the bit.
Yeah. And it's funny now with the internet, it's like really, they don't care how good it is. Like, it used to be you got a guy like, you know, Cosby or Carlin or Newhart would put out an album, and it was like this, they gave birth to it, you know, it was this thing that they knew was going to be like their legacy. And now it's like, if you did that, nobody would care. Like, you got a new seat. What else you got going on?
Yeah.
I'd be like, no, I put out a fucking album. Yeah. Like, that's important.
It's a lot.
Sure.
But now it's like, no, but how many times did you tweet today? And, you know, how many like viral videos did you put out? And did you reply to everybody on Facebook? Like, you don't have time to put out an album. And if you do, like, I don't think my 1 hour special is going to mean anything. I mean, it will to me.
Sure.
And I think that maybe people that have seen my stand-up and like it will be like, oh, that's great. I'll watch that. But it's not a life changer. It's not a career changer. The only thing that really can change you is just doing it a lot, being on the road a lot. Podcasts helps a lot. But, you know, there's no real, like, huge gain from from recorded material anymore, I don't think.
Yeah, it's just, I think it's like the fan base, the people who consume this stuff now, it's just a content producing, consuming society, like culture.
Right.
So like if you do what we do, their whole thing is just like, give us content. So I think the one path you can take as a comic who does specials or records albums is literally keep giving them content, you know, like
some people the hard thing is letting go of the quality of it, because you can't put it out with that regularity. If like I, you know, there's days where I like, oh, I haven't tweeted in 3 days, I should really write a tweet, and then I sit there and I fucking stare at it and I'm like, I don't feel like I'm not feeling it. I don't just know. I'm not talking to anybody. I'd have to think of a topic and then craft something. So and then there's other days where I'll think of like a funny angle on something and then I'll blast out like a dozen tweets in 15 minutes.
Yeah.
And that feels like a rush.
Yeah.
But that's not what people want. They want it like, you know, 7 times a day, every day.
Yeah. Yeah.
I can't.
Well,
you know?
I'm with you on that, and I also think that putting the like as far as the content as stand up album special, the idea that you should do it in a time frame is also ridiculous. I think you should produce content where it's you're happy with the quality with it in whatever time frame that is. Like in other words,
I'm sick of people doing the like I'm going to do one every year. It's like, well, what if you had a bad year?
Yeah. Right,
if you
it's just not worked feel, out.
Yeah,
yeah.
I know. Why would you? Who gives a fuck? If it's a year and a half, 2 years.
Yeah.
Don't you want it to be good?
I know. Yeah. You look at some bands and they'll put out 2 or 3 albums in a row and then it takes them 7 years to do another album.
There's
and then
a
it comes
reason.
Out and it's like. You know, you look like Radiohead or something comes out and it fucking blows your mind.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. This is an exact science here.
Yeah. I think it's trying to become a science because there's so many people that see dollar signs with comedy and podcasting and all these things that, you know, you've got managers and agents and producers telling you that, well, you know, I see these young comics and they're so brainwashed, you know, all they talk about is the industry and they never talk about jokes. They never get excited about a new bit they're doing or anything. And so it's like, that's always going to, I think the guy that's like, you know, working on those new bits and excited about performing, like that's always going to, I think, show up as what's good. You know, you may not make as much money or you may not be as like commercially successful, but you know, I think that those are going to be the people that people really have an experience with when they see. That they know it feels different when they see somebody like that.
Yeah, yeah.
But I do think even those dogs have their day. Like, I mean, look at Louis C.K., who was is such a stellar comic, and I don't think he put much effort into. I don't know him that well, but he's older, like you, like 60-something,
right? Like he, years old, right?
You know what I mean? Like there was a guy that for years people were like, "Oh, when's that gonna pop?" And he did. And Dave Attell, like you said, a great joke writer. Hmm. I don't think Attell ever did. He ever put like effort? Is he even on Twitter, Dave Attell?
No, I doubt.
He's just
on
a joke
Twitter.
Guy. He just cares about jokes. But that's more to what he's saying, though. I think.
Am I making the wrong point?
No, I'm. Yeah, I mean,
but I'm thinking commercial success too. Like those guys have their right. Like I want to root for those dudes. Is what I'm trying to say.
Right.
I think
I want there to be a light.
I want Kindler to be famous.
Right.
But Kindler doesn't want to be famous. That's the thing that you can't presuppose is what people want. You know, like you know, the older I get, and I'm pretty old, I realize like all the things that maybe frustrated me I look back and I do a gut check and I think, you didn't want that. You didn't want to be on a sitcom. Like all those auditions, you wasted your time driving to the Valley. Yeah. You never wanted that.
No, it would be right. Misery.
And there's a part of me that loves stand-up so much that, like, I don't know that I necessarily sabotage other possibilities, but if you really found something you love, like stand-up, you're never going to give that passion to something else.
Right.
That's absolutely true.
Yeah, that's true.
That's my rationalization for having stalled out in the middle of show business.
No. What are you talking about?
I just sold a show yesterday to FX.
Okay.
Did you really?
Yep.
Congratulations.
Thank you very much.
Wonderful.
Is this a show like a...
I'm actually creating and producing it.
Really?
For another guy. The... I know.
For
That's
me?
Amazing.
Is it me?
It's for a guy named Josh Topolsky. He's a big tech guy. He's got this website called The Verge. It gets like 13 million downloads a month. And so he had this idea of doing sort of like a tech show, like a daily show kind of thing about the internet.
Yeah.
So he met with a bunch of people and then ended up with me, and we created the show together, and then we pitched it to
That's great.
FX, and they there bought it go. The next day, and we're going to shoot a pilot.
Congratulations.
Yeah, thank Wonderful.
You. Thank you.
There you go.
That's show business.
See? Right. Show business. Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. What's your advice? How should we proceed with our careers?
I don't know. What do you want?
Isn't that the biggest
That's the question.
To quote Heidegger, it's all in the asking of the question, which your answer will be. So that's
right.
A good question.
Right.
What do you want, Tom?
I want to sell tickets, more tickets, do stand up a lot more, and not fly coach.
So you want to do what you're doing, but to a broader audience.
Yeah. I'd like to do movies too. I should add that. Yeah.
Have you done movies?
No.
What makes you think you want to do them?
I've just always wanted to do it.
Hmm. Have you taken acting classes?
Yeah. But I haven't gone out for much stuff lately.
Do you have an agent?
Yeah.
Well, that's good. They know you want to do movies?
Yeah. I should probably push them more, huh?
I don't know if you can push them. It's kind of hard.
Yeah.
It's hard. It's hard when you're a stand-up to tell your agent when they've got a stable of guys that are fucking gorgeous and have lived and breathed acting for 15 years.
It's true.
And you go, yeah, like the way you just said it to me. Yeah. Oh, and I should also add, I'd like to do movies. Your agent, you know, if I'm an agent, I'm sending the other guys in. So,
of course.
So as a stand-up, I think it's almost like you gotta make some noise on your own way, and then, you know, like Louis, all of a sudden Louis's in movies. Woody Allen puts him in a movie.
Yeah.
So it's tough if you I think it's like anything in life. If it doesn't have your full attention and your engagement, then I don't think it's gonna work. I don't know. Some people happen into it, but then maybe that's not the thing that would make you really happy.
That's true.
That is
the truth. Like, it seems like happiness comes from when you discover something that really, you know, that you're passionate about, and then you take the gamble of shoring up all your resources and focusing them on that thing, and it doesn't happen. And then you go, no, fuck you. Mm-hmm. No, I'm going to keep showing up. And then finally it happens. I think that's the feeling that the human experience really wants. That's the satisfying moment, not the guy who is the famous story of the actor who came out here and he didn't even he had one audition and he got
Ashton Kutcher at 70
first audition.
Yeah.
The other guy too, the guy that kind of looks like him. Do you know what I'm talking about? And he lives in Minneapolis.
No,
good looking.
Ross Broccoli.
Is that a person?
Yeah.
You know what I'm talking about.
Prince.
He
Mary Tyler Moore.
Josh Hartnett. Hartnett?
Okay. Yeah. Okay, yeah. He's real cute, too.
Yeah. Okay, yeah. Similar type. Came on, did an audition. I also heard, related, like, in the through the Ashton Kutcher thing, that Topher Grace, who was on that 70s show, booked that on his first audition.
Cool.
I think that, was it Leonardo DiCaprio, or was it, he might have nailed it on his first audition also.
Wow. Yeah.
And I think Sean Penn...
Well, that's a guy you look at and you're like, yeah, that guy's acting is...
How come he only did one comedy and it was like the greatest comedy of all time?
Dead Man Walking?
No, he was in...
Spicoli.
Yeah. Fast Times at Ridgemont High.
Fast Times at Ridgemont High, yeah.
And that was it. Wrapped it up. His first big breakout role, comedy.
And he's hilarious.
He's hilarious in it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Never does comedy again.
he doesn't, I think he doesn't, clearly from his choices in movies, and he can do whatever he wants, he must not value that shit as much. You know what I mean? Like, he values the meaty, dramatic role. Like, that's to him is the the thing to go after.
Sure.
He wants to be.
See, there's an example. He got the comedy. Yeah. I realized that wasn't the thing.
Yeah. What do you want?
You know, I'm in limbo because, like, I think I want the sitcom. I think I want the stuff. And then you're like, I don't really watch sitcoms. Mm. I don't like them. I haven't liked them since the 80s, since I grew up watching, like, really good ones. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I like this. I enjoy being myself, most of all. I enjoy stand-up the most. I absolutely love being a comic. I don't love being away from my home, from my dog, as much as I am. Yeah. Like, if I could be a comic, well, the dog first, and then you.
Right.
But if I could find a way to be a comic where I could, like, minimize my amount of time out, maybe, and have a better quality of life at home right now.
That sounds about right.
That's sell more tickets, though. That's that formula.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
Well, it's sell more tickets, but then have the wherewithal to leave some of it on the table.
True.
You know, you look at Benson. Benson doesn't go out on the weekends.
Yeah.
He goes in on a Tuesday and does a 4:20 p.m. show.
Yeah.
And then fucking heads home. Like,
yeah.
He could be making a lot more money if he wanted to, like, stick around all week.
Yeah, and that's not even to go to a wife. He just doesn't want to be out there, basically, right? I mean,
no, that's to go to, like, Comic-Con or, like, he'll go do some other fun shit for no money.
Yeah, yeah.
Fucking douche. I'm so jealous of that guy.
Yeah, no, and I've heard, from all the clubs that we play, that they're like, yeah, he just came out here, came out on Tuesday, sold this place out.
Right.
It was fucking out of here, man.
Right.
Throughout the night, I'm like, that's great.
I know.
I did 6 fucking shows for this bullshit.
Because this podcast and stand-up are the two places where you can say and do as you please. You don't get notes from an executive. You don't get that
The last bastion of free speech.
Yeah.
Right.
And that's why I got into this. So,
all right. Well, that's good.
I mean, I've worked as a writer. I was on Chelsea Lately as a writer for like a minute and a half, and I got fired. I wrote on, like, children's cartoons and shit for years. So I know what that is, and it's a fucking bummer.
Yeah.
You know, to sit in a cubicle and, like,
for you,
it's just not my spirit. For me, absolutely. Yeah. And for some people,
I think
it's
for
a great
it's
life.
Hard. It's hard.
Yeah. My ego doesn't allow me to write jokes for another woman.
Right.
Like, fuck that.
Right.
It made me crazy.
Uh-huh.
But again, you're right. That is a wonderful show business job for many people.
Yeah, some people, it's the thing they want.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And it's a good thing. It's fine.
I know a ton of stand-up comics that really were really funny, great joke writers, and were miserable. They hated being in front of people. And they're some of the best writers in Hollywood now.
Of course.
Some of the biggest showrunners I know are guys that were struggling stand-ups, and they found this other thing, and they were like, oh, this is what I wanted.
Yeah.
I mean, I've written on a lot of shows. And
have you written on a lot of shows?
Yeah, I wrote on Lucky Louie.
Oh, that's right.
And I fucking love it, and I'm getting into it now.
Yeah, I know. I hope I get some residuals. Everybody keeps telling me how now they're watching it.
Yeah, I go back, and I get it, and I appreciate it so much more now.
Yeah.
Because I didn't get it when it came out. I was too young a comedian, maybe, and too young
so
a person.
Young. Right.
I'm like, you know, I'm only in my 20s now.
I know.
I fucking love that show, man.
No, it was a good show. Great. And no, I've written on a million shows. I've been writing for TV for like probably 12 years.
You enjoy
pretty
it
pretty much every year. I enjoy it at first, and I love having my own coffee mug and
exciting.
Flirting with a PA and laughing in a writer's room and all the normal shit that people do with jobs.
Yeah.
And then one day they were like, okay, some fucking PA's going, okay, we're in the room. And you're like, I'm being clapped into a room where I have to sit with other people. And I could be in a bathtub listening to my own shit and an hour. And it's tough to match up. But at the same time, I get pretty nuts on the road, too. So I think I've been really fortunate to strike a balance with writing and doing stand-up like 50-50 over the last 12 years or so.
Yeah.
And then to be able to now sell shows.
That's fantastic.
It keeps me keeps the fun part where you develop the pilot, you write it, you work your ass off for a few months.
Yeah.
Then it doesn't get picked up and you go back to St. Louis.
Yeah.
Right.
Just as you're getting sick
of it. Isn't that the truth?
My writing, God, I've written on a couple pilots that none of them got picked up.
Yeah.
But I was, the fun thing is I enjoyed, because I'm so much road dog, like all the time.
Mm.
Like they're like, you got this gig, you're in town working on this for like, let's say a month, right? So I'd work on it like a month. And then for the month, I would get in that routine of like, this is fun. I drive to work. I drive home every night. I get to have dinner at home. The whole camaraderie, the working on it and focusing on something, putting your energy into it. And then towards the end, I get like, you know, excited to shoot the thing. And then it would be like, I'm ready to get out on the road again. And then it would also not get picked up. And I'd be like, oh, fine. That's fine. I want to go back out anyways. Yeah.
I've managed to get like on so many shows. Well, a lot of shows that made one season. So it's like you get like 6 months. You have to earn a certain amount to qualify for Writers Guild insurance. Mm-hmm. And for 12 years, I've qualified every year. And yet only two of those years was I writing for the full year. So I've managed to get on failed show after failed show after not picked up pilot. And sometimes just selling a script and then, you know, having to work really hard for a month and write the script and then being done with it.
Do you enjoy writing scripts?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I have ADHD, so I get hyper focused. I mean, I can really get off on just sitting alone in a room and it's a puzzle, you know, mm-hmm. It's a really complicated puzzle and I just get lost in it. And then I'm just done.
Wow.
You know?
Yeah.
But I think that the hard thing is for writing on a staff is that, you know, you do that show on Friday and then fucking show up on Monday and start mm-hmm. all over again every week. It seems like a kind of a nightmare.
Yeah.
Unless you're a really even keeled person who just can show up, who's like a real process person.
But here's the difference between like a show business gig and like working at a normal office gig. Cause I feel like I've obviously done both. Normal work environments, like if you're doing working like a nonprofit organization, it's not so fear-based. You know, you're not under the constant threat of like, is today the day I get fired? Someone gonna hate me? Am
it's
I gonna
a horrible
fucking
environment?
Right? Am I gonna say something that's gonna piss off that guy? Who's gonna tell that guy? And then I'm out. Like, there's not
and
that
the people
constant.
That last are really the ones that live by that fear. Well,
yes, correct.
And my policy has always been just I go the opposite direction. I show up late. I'm loud. I'm obnoxious because people give you so much credibility. Meanwhile, you may not be getting a fucking joke in the script, but they're like, well, this guy, he's not scared.
That's interesting. That's the approach I should have taken
quite a few times. Don't
Isn't
give a fuck.
Isn't that the truth about
everything? And that's
everything?
The way to be, huh?
Right.
Yeah.
About everything.
Well, yeah. We were talking about that, remember the meeting?
We just talked about that.
I had a big meeting yesterday, and basically the way that it came about was I said I was unavailable, and I truly was, for the times that were proposed. I was like, well, I'm leaving. I'm leaving all the dates that you're proposing. And they're like, well, then we need to get you in today.
Right.
And so then all of a sudden it became priority.
right. Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah.
No, it's like when you're a New York comic and you come out for meetings. Boy, you'll get 8 meetings in a week. But if you live out here, those same 8 meetings take all fucking year because you're here.
Sure.
What are my avails? I live in Venice.
Yeah.
And I got a car. You let me. What works for you, sir?
Yeah.
What works for you, Asian guy who's never been funny, for me to pitch my material for your approval?
Right.
Yeah. And then it does take, it literally takes all year. At the end of the year, they're like, yeah, I remember you. What were you here for? Why did we want to see you?
Yeah.
Like, oh, yeah. Okay.
No, it's a crazy business and it's like, it smells fear.
Yes.
And the more you can, we all feel the fear.
Yeah.
But the more you can... bullshit. Or I don't think it's bullshit as much as just like when I walk into a comedy club, I'm so fucking happy.
Yeah.
Like I'm so happy to see other comics.
Me too.
And I feel like that on TV shows, like God, there's a writer's room full of these funny fucking people. And I just that overrides all the fear and all the bullshit. And I guess if you just don't think about it too much.
But some people really are built for it. Like you see people, some people, don't you feel like that, like peers or even just people that you've seen and you're like, that person knows how to navigate, not necessarily that you're a fan of their,
seminar on show business. That bitch hasn't figured the fuck out.
Joke
take
writing
a class in a minute.
she's tremendous at that, right?
Like, she's so good at show business. Yeah. She's not in this for like the emotional payoff the way that some of us are. Like her mom and dad, she doesn't have the same issues that I do going into a shrink's cat. You know what I mean? Like she does not do it for validation the way that I do.
Yeah, well, I don't know what her issues. She might have her own. I'm just saying. About, do you know what there are for her?
I don't know, but I just wish I could channel those issues into like a sitcom, like a deal.
No, but what has. I'm saying is that like she is somebody.
She's a fucking loser. I gotta pee really bad. I gotta go.
Okay, should we?
Sorry, continue.
Wait, what time is it here?
Yeah, he's gotta probably, go to his family. Right. And I mean, I know you're so interesting, though.
Yeah, you are.
Quite possibly the best guest we've ever had.
Really?
Yeah. Hands down. Will you come back? Will you come back one day?
Absolutely.
If you come really? Back, will you do our show, like the way that we do it?
Yeah, if you guys, I'll listen to it. Let me check it out online. What's it called?
Oh my God.
It's called Your Mom's House. It's,
do you have an app?
We don't have an app.
No. Okay. Well, I'll just go to iTunes.
Yeah. Like, do you have an app?
I do, right.
What's it? It's Fitzdog?
Well, my podcast is called Fitzdog Radio.
Yeah, tell everybody.
I think the app is just called Fitzdog Radio or Fitzdog. And or
doesn't
go to Fitzdog.com. Well, because I just got into this premium membership thing, and they created a new app, so I had to get rid of my old app.
Premium membership for your podcast?
Yeah, you can sign up for a premium membership.
Oh, I got to talk to you about this. But people can follow you on Twitter at...
At Greg Fitz Show. And yeah, check out the book, the audio book of Dear Mrs. Fitzsimmons. You can get... at audible.com or on my website. That's a fun read.
Fantastic.
It's a fun listen.
Go to yourmomshousepodcast.com. Follow at Christina P, at Tom Segura. Thank you very much for listening. And thanks again for doing the show,
Greg.
It's my pleasure. Thanks for having me on.
It was great.
Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Love you, mommies.
I gotta